Hello, folks. Tyler here. Due to some unforeseen circumstances, we did not record this week, so you get one from the time capsule, a little bit of time travel for you. But we did want to also remind you that we are coming up on our one-year anniversary recording, where we wanted to do something a little special for, with, or to you called a question and answer. So please email us questions at ruinedheroespod@gmail.com or send us a private message on Facebook. We are Ruined Heroes Pod there as well, and we will answer as many as we can get in and release it in addition to one of our normally poorly produced podcasts. So you'll get probably two that week. But other than that, until then, enjoy this little bit of a blast from the past, something that we did while it was still really hot out.
With your fucking pretzels now?
Yeah, I am.
All right, so anybody wants to bitch about the noise in the podcast, talk to Rupert directly, because I told him not to eat while we were recording.
You know what? I would rather have Rupert eating.
I'm happy his blood sugar is coming up and he's not murderous, but...
Yeah, because he's creative, okay?
I don't know if he's creative or offensive.
Do you really want to go in that line room where he's trying to murder us?
Did you see... All right, so there... It's been a long-said thing that maybe Bansky is one of the guys involved in Massive Attack, the producer guy, I believe.
Who the fuck are you talking about?
Bansky? Or Banksy, thank you.
Banksy?
Banksy, yeah.
The graffiti guy?
Yeah. Yeah, it's been a long-said thing that he's part of Massive Attack. You don't like him? I fucking love him. Either way...
whole tableau things about Banksy's artwork.
He's amazing. But either way...
It's really cool to be into Banksy now.
It has now come to light... More information that it is one of the guys from Massive Attack. And you look at the Banksy graffiti and the Massive Attack tour date map, they jive. It's...
Who's Massive Attack?
You don't know who Massive Attack is?
A skateboarding group or something? What the fuck?
Massive Attack is a band. You've heard them. You've probably played them in the back of your... There's probably some on your website, for fuck's sake. Mezzanine, you are my angel. Come from me above.
I'm
bring
surprised
me love.
That you have this teardrop ice, but these really good pretzels.
Those aren't good. Those are the cheap pretzels.
They're really crisp.
Safeway makes good pretzels. Well, whoever makes Safeway pretzels makes good pretzels. Safeway did not make those pretzels. They're made... Kroger pretzels, technically, and before that, they're probably made it just X.
You look like a fucking gerbil on a wheel, man. I just set you up and you run.
Just dangle a carrot and off I fucking go, bitch.
Okay.
Plow a field.
All right. So, I'm Rupert, and I am so excited about this topic because I couldn't be less excited about the previous one. Therefore, it's a proportional thing.
It is a time travel topic. It's a second of the day, which is why your Facebook ads won't line up. But you're thrilled. You're also thrilled because we gave you a warning.
Well, yeah.
Okay, so, ladies and gentlemen, we are Ruined Heroes. We are a weekly self-produced podcast wherein the three of us discuss a topic of societal renown. I, Tyler, chase information like Roach does darkness. John.
Sometimes I look around on the internet and sometimes I come up with something that's kind of curious.
And Rupert, who is obviously thrilled,
is now happy because I've got some ice, I've got some pretzels, I'm all set up.
Iced beer. Twice in a row.
Let people like things.
I'm the Filipino.
You know what I like?
Let people like things.
Firing that can out of a cannon would be.
Do you know what else you did? You asked everybody around the campfire what was their favorite show, and then you proceeded to tell them how they were wrong.
Oh my God, I'm so glad I wasn't there.
I so do that.
Oh God.
There was.
You were violently in people's faces. You are wrong. That's not a good show.
Wait, what was
you
your
asked
most
what
wrong
their
show?
Favorite was.
What was your most
there
wrong
was
show?
A lot of chemicals involved, I couldn't tell you.
No, there was only two.
Well, it was more than one. So anyway. You can find us anywhere you listen to podcasts.
Cosmic Phenomenal Power.
As Ruin Heroes.
Space.
Yeah.
And at our website, ruinheroes.com, for direct downloads. Please subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, whatever they, you
please
want to call them.
We're totally desperate.
It does matter there because people can hear us or
just
get better
validation.
Seat. Kind
it makes
of.
Tyler feel
but
better.
It, no, it actually helps people find us. The higher you made it on
better.
iTunes, the easier it is to find us.
Makes Tyler feel better.
If you would like to interact with us, get weekly hints, or tell us how awful we are, which a lot of you are really good at, we are Ruin Heroes Pod at Gmail, Facebook, and Twitter. And totally, if you want to like flame us directly through Gmail, I'll take that email. That's good.
Or Facebook. That's cool, too.
Right? like flame us on Facebook. That's good.
Oh, man, that'd be the best.
I know.
Actually, we sort of had
we invite you.
Earth,
we did with the Flat Earth thing, but we invite you to flame us and tell us how much you hate us on Facebook. So we are Ruin Heroes Pod on Facebook if you want to tell us how terrible we are. Lastly, if you feel compelled to pay us for all this web stuff and equipment and booze and such, you can find us at Patreon, Patreon.com/RuinedHeroes, or the donate link on our site. You start getting extra shit at $1 a month. Ladies and gentlemen, this week's topic, the intro. This person was called the Picasso of our profession by one of his contemporaries.
Ron Jeremy?
No. It was amazing to see him. It was like seeing Coltrane. Robin Williams said that.
I'm going to leave out the first name of it, or the name of it, Live and Smokin'.
Mm-hmm.
Is it something I said?
This live word we can't say is crazy.
Live on the Sunset Strip.
We're doing Richard
here and
Pryor.
Now.
We're totally doing Richard Pryor.
Okay.
Like I gave you the warning, there's going to be a little difficulty with words because we're three middle-class white men, and there are words that we are not allowed to say involved.
I have extreme difficulty with Robin Williams saying it was like seeing Coltrane. It's like, first of all, when white guys bring up John Coltrane, and if you compare anybody to John Coltrane, that is the whitest comment.
It's a pretty white that's, play.
It is
a pretty white play.
The whitest comment you can make. Because I'll tell you something. You go down to the hood, there are not a lot of black people jamming
that even know who Coltrane is.
Yeah. Yeah. You see some black kids on a corner in a black area. I'm sorry. Oops. My bad. Inner city. Have you
thank
ever
you.
Seen black kids jamming to a Love Supreme? No. You ever see white guys like Robin Williams jamming to it?
No.
Yes.
Oddly
lots.
Enough, though.
It's the whitest thing in the world. Whitest music this side of Bob Marley.
The second or the third Gemini that I went to, I woke up one morning. You come up and you're like, brother, what do you need?
I love Supreme.
Do you need coffee or something? I'm like,
Supreme.
I need Coltrane.
I love Supreme.
And you sat down and you pulled out a stereo and you put the cassette in and
Supreme.
You, boom, there it is.
One of the best fucking albums. All right, anybody out there, if you don't think you like jazz, I dare you to close your eyes
and listen to this
album.
No, wave off. If you think you don't like jazz,
Listen to Love Supreme.
No,
one of the
do
best
not
albums
do that.
Ever.
Do not ever do that. Never do that.
Follow it up with A Kind of Blue, Miles Davis.
If you think you don't like jazz, listen to A Kind of Blue.
You're going
to
pull out the big D.
Listen to A Kind of Blue or...
Dig up anything you can by Sonny Rollins or Charlie Parker.
Oh, God. Now you're hitting old school there.
If you think you don't like jazz... Listen to Miles Davis, Kind of Blue, Round Midnight, something like that.
Oh,
it's
anything
really,
Thelonious.
It's anything Thelonious Monk. Listen to that. The second thing, the second day. Once you're into it, then listen to A Love Supreme. But if you think you don't like jazz and you listen to A Love Supreme, you will confirm it.
If you're thinking
you will confirm
about,
it. That
if you're
is all, that's,
thinking about becoming Muslim, listen to A Love Supreme.
Yes. Okay, yeah.
It's a beautiful album, and honestly, if you don't have an understanding of Muslims, listen to A Love Supreme.
If you want to blow things up, because listen to A Love Supreme.
It is so amazing.
If you have women and men out there.
Oh, four tracks, an hour and a half. It's so good.
Any of the men's out there, if you've got women hanging around your house and you want them gone, put on A Love Supreme. Women will go. They will not be there. They will not.
The woman that I had with me was all kinds of about the Coltrane when we sat down.
So
I forgot the topic. What is it again?
Source reference. I want to commend the people that built RichardPryor.com because unlike Hershey, which was a fucking cartoon website, RichardPryor.com is a beautifully built website. If you want to go learn something about it, the biography in it is very all-encompassing. From all the other notes I saw, most everything I saw was referenced in it.
It hasn't been updated since like 2000.
Yeah, but he's been dead. Nothing's changing. There is that.
Fundraisers, things like that can still happen. But
there were a few documentaries. Amit the Logic is a good one. Icon is a good one. There were a couple other ones that weren't as sparkling, so I didn't write them down. But total shout out to RichardPryor.com. That site's pretty well built and functional. I also wanted to do a disclaimer. I do not want nor intend to dwell on race. But Pryor's career was heavily based on this topic, so it'll come up a lot. It'll come up a lot. I just want to say that. And if I misstep in words, I'm not out to offend anybody. I'm chasing Richard Pryor's life, and he did and said a lot of things that were grounded.
That was the whole point of his career.
Well, not always.
When he reshaped himself, yes.
At first he had an album with him being chased by Klansmen.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Called That Nigger's Crazy.
Just because you can get loud doesn't mean you can be right.
Let's try not to say that word.
Okay, so
it's the name of his album.
He started.
I understand that, and there's this great.
He started out a little more vanilla, and was very
well. He outwardly called himself a Negro, which is also an offensive term, but he called himself a Negro, and the way he used that word was he was a Bill Cosby follower. His original attacks were Bill Cosby. Can we do a little history on him first before we get into this racial shit? Okay, so he was born Richard Franklin Lennox Thomas Pryor III. All those names, III. On December 1st, 1940, same year as my dad, ironically, he cites in his bio that he was raised in a brothel owned by his grandmother, that his mother, Gertrude Nee Thomas is her name, was a sex worker in. He had four brothers and sisters. He was raped by a teenage neighbor by six and molested by a priest around the same time. He was expelled from school at 14 and went to work as a janitor at a strip club, a shoe shiner, a drummer, a meat packer, a truck driver, and a pool hall attendant throughout his life. He was in the Army from 58 to 60 until he had an altercation with another GI that said that he and some other black soldiers beat and stabbed a white soldier who was being particularly racist. After the discharge, he was given gigs as a singer and it said not to be great, and he moved on to comedy. Now, back to his early work. It was very white bread stuff. It was very Bill Cosby. It was really clean. There were lots of faces and voices done. And he did that for a number of years. And he moved out of his place in Illinois into New York City and started hitting the scene with that work. Have you ever seen any of that work?
That's before the That Nigger's Crazy album.
Significantly before that. We'll get there. That happened in Berkeley. Everything good happens in Berkeley, right?
But before what album?
So, the that back appropriated word is crazy.
That's how we're going to deal with this?
I said, I talked to you this midweek on this.
I know.
I'm having trouble with this one because although I'm not personally afraid of the word, I'm not really supposed to say it.
Well, when we touched on this, I was interested in taking this in a direction where we discuss more the progress of comedy from the history of, you know, these guys when you actually had to be a little bit intelligent to understand, one, the comedy, and two, be the comic. It wasn't built around Paris Hilton. It wasn't built around, you know, your comedy wasn't built around, you know, look at the roasts that are happening. Once a month, they were spitting these things out.
So you're saying comedy moves from the banal to the social commentary level?
Yes. It used to be life stories.
Yeah.
And it became a very social commentary kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And that's the reality of comedy. Yeah, it's like, if you're going to be a professional comedian, you write a new show a year.
Comedy has...
You do a new 45 every year.
Comedy has always been political.
Agreed. Not always.
Sure.
I'd say not always.
Martin Luther.
But what you...
Lenny Bruce.
What you end up...
No, Lenny Bruce was not a comic. He was a boring guy who, like...
Lenny Bruce was
came
a fucking genius.
Oh, no, Lenny Bruce is horrible. He's boring.
What you end up, says Bruce is a genius.
What you end up finding, boring. Though, is that a lot of these guys, you actually had to... You had to be up to date in things.
Yeah.
And you had to be educated. You had to educate yourself. You couldn't just pick up a phone and sit there and go through five different things and be like, oh, that's funny. And it's funny because some idiot did something. Okay, it's not because Paris Hilton went to Walmart, or...
Which is funny.
Yeah, but how many comedians jumped on that bandwagon?
All of them.
Yeah. What is funny about that?
Paris Hilton has a sex tape.
What does that actually accomplish?
It's...
All of these guys back in this day, and the people that they truly inspired, Dave Chappelle, Chris Rock, they actually have something to contribute. They have something to say about the world that they live in to this day.
Well, almost every comedian alive today will credit Richard Pryor to some extent.
Oh, yeah. They have to. They
almost
have to.
Everyone, because he changed the world, and he changed the vernacular, and he changed the way you can attack social commentary.
Lisa Lampanelli would not be able to say the things that
Agreed.
She says.
Nor be a non-white female comic.
Uh-huh.
Well, actually, she's totally white, Lisa Lampanelli.
She is white. She's very white.
I was thinking Margaret Cho.
Okay.
Non-white female comic
Margaret
would
Cho's
not
white.
Exist yeah. today without Richard Pryor.
He made it okay to put... words and thoughts and feelings out there that were abusive, and it was okay to start laughing about them and take away some of the power behind them.
So there was a quote I saw.
He was the first to tackle racial issues with
yes.
comedy.
Yeah. Yes.
He was the first to really do it. And he was the first to make black people were comfortable with joking about racial issues forever.
Yeah.
Before it. He was the first to make white people comfortable with joking about racial issues.
That's the comment I heard, is that, and it was from more than one person, the funniest thing was that the people that laughed hardest at his white person impressions
yeah.
were the white people.
Yeah. Exactly.
Like, we laughed harder because, and I still, like, I watched a handful of his specials. I laugh harder at his white person impersonations oh, yeah. than his black culture talks uh-huh. because... I've so fucking met that guy. And in some ways, I kind of am that guy.
You're totally that guy.
Not quite like this.
Yeah, when you start telling me not to mention the full
Bandcamp
name...
Bandcamp stories?
When you start telling me not to mention the full name of an album that Richard Pryor himself put out...
I am on
you
it
are
because,
that guy.
I am on it because don't say that word. And
you're totally that guy.
And I actually went through a phase while studying this where I've been a proponent for making that word general vernacular, making it not uncomfortable. And while doing this research, I have changed my views, actually, on that word.
Here's what
I don't intend to use it again.
Somebody, Tyler, years ago told me, and this kind of helped me wrap my head around a couple of things, because I was raised around multiple cultures. I didn't understand. I mean, it just, people are people. I mean,
yeah, I went to 30%
so
white school.
Who the fuck cares?
Like, when you measure that
why?
Direction. Like, it happens.
And I know people that are...
But...
Paul, he's from Belize. Very, very, very dark skin.
So, anyway.
And when you're raised around this instance, you don't understand the value of words. And then I met you, and you said, okay, there's no such thing as bad words. There's people who use words poorly.
Agreed.
Now, I can expand
that.
Upon that by saying that there's also societal and cultural instances where you shouldn't use those words. And that's part of using those words correctly. Just because you can say them doesn't mean that it's right to say them in that particular moment.
In the current social climate, a white person cannot use that particular word correctly, no matter what you do.
Bullshit.
Maybe in the one instance of reading the actual words, that Hulk Hogan said, or the title of an actual Richard Pryor.
I'm not going to go there. Because it's like, you know, you start. I get that symbols change, and I get that meanings change, and context changes. I get that. But I am really sick of this attitude that, like, no. These idiots who ban these symbols or ban these words will not...
I'm on this train all of a sudden because there's one that fucking bugs me personally right now.
These idiots that will not acknowledge that they have demonized a symbol or demonized the context of a word to the point where you can never use it. I am more annoyed by those people than I am at the prospect of somebody actually using this word or this symbol in some sort of cross-burning thing. And I will cite as an example Elvis Costello's song Oliver's Army. He uses one less white nigger in the song. And it's like, oh, so what? I can't listen to this song anymore. Ever. Or what? I make sure when I listen to it that there's no black people around. Or when I listen to this song, I make sure that there's no...
But the company is at least complying to the situation.
Those people, that where it's like, I make sure that there's none of these people around before I play Elvis Costello's Oliver's Army.
Yeah.
That's the people Richard Pryor was doing the white impersonation of.
And here's my current word. Bisexual. As a self-identified bisexual, quit fucking vilifying what I identify as.
Wait, what are you talking about? People are vilifying.
You're not allowed to say bisexual anymore.
What about? So what about people like me that?
Yeah, vanilla, ironically, is not devil yet, but it's coming soon.
Listen, well, no, to you it is vilified.
Okay. There is some of that. It's not vilified. It's just somebody that doesn't play in my circle. But go ahead.
It's not vilified, it's denigrated.
The way that I look at things is I don't pass any form of judgment on something. It's just, it's a fact. I have a fact about something or somebody. You're a little queer. Okay, cool. You're a little queer. Okay, cool. Whatever. It doesn't...
Not hurting you.
It doesn't... it's a fact in my brain. It doesn't mean that I'm passing any form of judgment about it.
We're not talking about you. We're talking about the societal context.
No, we're kind of talking about... That's the thing about societal context. It is about the individual.
Yeah. Because an individual...
And how they react. How the own judgment reacts to the
societal thing.
Right.
So I have a hard time relating to a lot of people about this. Even though I don't fit your mold, I don't have any problem with it because it's just a fact to me.
Right.
It's a fact. It's a way of life. Okay, it's not for me.
And I'm sorry if it's
me. I don't give a shit one way or another.
If it's me and three friends that speak Ebonics, no matter what color their skin is, I will eventually start speaking slight Ebonics. It's not a thing on you. It's just...
Well, that's a whole other thing.
So
this isn't like like going down to Tennessee.
Can we call this our big warning that we really don't want to offend anybody, and can we move on to Richard Pryor?
Yeah, let's be all right, people. We don't mean to offend you.
Well, seriously, I don't.
Because we're talking about somebody who used that, and you should be offended.
And conversely, in addition to not wanting to offend somebody, if somebody is a user of these words, I'd like to educate them on how... I personally feel about it, being a person who's not particularly offended, but seeing that it's not okay to do it.
The idea of opening my mouth with the specific intent of every second it's opened of not offending somebody offends me.
We've all met you.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I completely...
I hope I offend you.
Okay, well, hold your horses there, Sparky. Slow down there. Because you were over at my house, and we didn't know each other really well. And you did... You...
And what?
Okay, it wasn't that you didn't go out of your way to offend me. You were being polite. It wasn't that you were holding back your words, but you were polite. Okay? You are respectful of a person's boundaries and spaces.
Sure. Well, no. I do a neutral zone when I'm first meeting somebody. Everybody mm-hmm. does that. Sure. Yeah.
But you will still continue to do so with me. You still do.
What do you mean? I modify.
You have a business vernacular, and you have a casual vernacular.
There is a degree of boundary pushing that you do with Tyler that you don't do with me. Because you know he's not right. No, because
he knows it.
I'm not there.
Mostly it's because I don't want to get into this kind of discussion every 5 minutes.
All right, so back to Richard Pryor. let's just go back to Richard Pryor.
Well, I thought we were still at Richard Pryor.
This is what he designed to do. Well, but
this is what he did.
This is why he did it.
He
that was started in 69. When he had been playing the Bill Cosby copy role for a number of years, he was doing a show in Vegas at the Aladdin, and he got on stage, and he held up the microphone, and he looked at the crowd, and he said, "What the fuck am I doing here?"
Okay, the one that I got.
And he retabled the mic, and he walked off the stage. At which point, he took 2 years off, and he calls it, and every biography, including his autobiography, was an epiphany. It was a moment where he needed to be more challenging and to bring this conversation we just started having into the public light by doing the impression of the white guy, by using the word and claiming it back for the black culture, and by doing all of that societally challenging, talking about his real life, growing up in a fucking brothel. And what's funny is, having watched a handful of things, he even tells dad stories when he really didn't have any contact with his dad. His dad was a fucking brick.
Yeah.
His grandmother was a bitch, or his mother was a bitch, his grandmother was a controlling bitch, although she raised him, but she beat the shit out of him, and he lived in a fucking brothel.
Yeah.
And it was a terrible situation, and it reminded me of, I mean, like I said, raped at, 12 or 13, 13. Earlier.
13.
And then fondled by a priest shortly afterward. Like, his upbringing, what kind of chance did he have? And look what kind of fucking magical person he had.
Being a good one.
Right. Well,
he managed to come out of it.
He had to dig himself out of a fucking hole.
Oh, please, give me a break. You know,
from a privileged New York world, man. You did not have to dig yourself out of a hole.
I'm not a complete idiot. There's a reason why the Jews are funny.
There's a lot of reasons why the Jewish are funny.
Yeah, and it's not because they had this great
turbulence. A lot of it is turbulence, yes.
It's not because they had this great Kush look. So there you go. That's what I'm telling you. Like, the dissonance in the upbringing breeds humorousness in your adult life. That's why I'm a funny guy.
Quaker.
Fuck you.
Oh.
Fuck you. God!
That escalated fast.
Okay.
I'm just telling you, if you have a really cush lifestyle, the most cush people I know when they were growing up, not funny. Not funny.
Pauly Shore.
Not funny.
Not even a little bit, dude.
Pauly Shore. Just to let you know, they were stoned.
Okay, modern comedians are stoned.
Saying the name Pauly Shore to me is the equivalent of yelling nigger at a Black Panthers rally. That's a horrible name and a horrible person, and he should be gone.
So,
Pauly Shore is horrible.
After he walked off stage.
We've got a cat young child.
After he walked off stage. He's not actually here. Be quiet. After Pryor walked off stage, he moved to Berkeley from New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where he started reassessing and coming out as the prominent black man that he is.
Yeah.
And one of the things that happened during that time is he was hanging out with he was one of the founders of the Black Panther.
Huey Newton.
Thank you.
Jesus Christ.
Yes, Huey Newton.
Yeah, Mr. Down with the Brothers over here.
Right. No, it took internet.
You are so fucking white, it's ridiculous.
I agree.
I want to... Jesus. Hugh something with the Black Panthers.
I wrote it down. That's why I have notes, so I don't fuck this shit up. But yes,
yeah, because Huey Newton's a kind of obscure name. Yeah. Jesus Christ. I can't believe you sometimes.
I don't blame you.
You lurch into this cul-de-sac of suburbia that's like just a black hole of suck.
Huey P. Newton at that, actually, who was an establishing member of the Black Panthers. And that's where a lot of that started coming out. The irony is he was still dating white women, and he'll comedically talk about that, which is funny.
Yeah, because Huey Newton did the whole black antagonistic thing. Every image of Huey Newton is totally antagonistic on that level. We're doing the Romulan salute here?
Yes. Right. Dude, keep going on. What are you doing?
I'm just saying, Huey Newton tailored his image to be constantly antagonistic in this, like, rebellious way.
Well, to the point that he got Richard Pryor to sit in a throne with a gun in one hand and an African staff in the other hand.
Yeah, because Huey Newton said, Richard Pryor, here, pose like me. Because Huey Newton, every goddamn picture of him is in a papasan chair sitting there with a fucking rifle.
Huey Newton just got Richard Pryor to do the exact same thing that Richard Pryor had done the entire time.
It was
play to a role.
It was kind of a power-up.
Play to a role.
Pryor was looking for the world anyhow.
Further my ends, much the same way that his mother and his grandmother had done.
Different world anyhow. He was looking for a new take, and he wasn't feeling like he was feeling true to his roots.
When
he
started getting
Huey Newton did some of that.
When he started getting true to himself.
Huey Newton, that's all he did. He constantly
moved beyond that fucker.
He constantly posed as a black man with a gun. That was the most challenging image there is
that's
a black man.
And he used Richard Pryor to further his ends.
If you Google search Huey P. Newton and click on images, you will see a black man with a gun almost every time.
Yeah,
so let's move on. But it was an interesting turn point in his life, and that's when Pryor became the guy that we were talking about earlier, that caused us as a society to challenge our word use.
Stopped dealing with him. Then he was able to start speaking for himself.
Yeah, because Huey Newton was fucking crazy.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah, Huey Newton was a fucking
Not to say Pryor wasn't.
Huey Newton was a little crazier. Huey Newton was a little crazier. He was nuts.
Ironically, Huey's still alive.
In the land of the blind, that's not ironic. Okay?
That is kind of ironic.
Deal with it.
No.
Can't even fucking deal with you right now. Give me my ear.
So the man with the big black dick that all the chicks
Shaft. You talking about Shaft?
Right on.
Bad motherfuckers. Shut
your mouth. You talking about Shaft?
Fuck yeah, Shaft. Oh god, I love that.
Who played Shaft? Richard Roundtree. Jesus! You guys, God!
If you give me a second, there's a fucking card catalog. I don't have that dodgy Google. Jesus. It's not, card catalog. I got a Rolodex of information.
Fucking Black Caesar, you
bitch, please.
So let's go to Saturday Night Live.
Oh, really?
Yeah, let's
go to Saturday Night Live. What happened during the
5 second delay?
No. Let's go with Chevy Chase on Saturday Night Live.
I didn't catch that one.
Oh, that skit? You didn't catch that skit? Oh, my God, you didn't catch that skit?
Are you out of your...
Oh, wait.
Oh my God.
That's the whole Richard Pryor thing.
All right, well, let's back up then.
That's the whole
thing. Let's back up a minute. Richard Pryor was scheduled to be the original host on the very first TV show of Saturday Night Live. But it didn't work out because the network was terrified of what he might say. So he ended up later in the season, after they had figured out how to build in a 5 second delay, so
no.
They mute any crazy ass.
Lauren Green had to hand in fake papers.
Lauren Michaels.
Lauren Green.
Bonanza.
He ran Bonanza.
Lauren Michaels.
Fucking aliens. All right, go ahead.
Lauren Michaels handed in fake papers.
What the fuck do you mean? What fake papers?
Fake resignation. Like, here, bring him on.
I'm resigning,
or you bring him on. And without Richard Pryor knowing, he had arranged for a 5 second delay.
Well, that's what
later
came up, though. Yeah.
Later, Pryor said, "If I'd known there was gonna be a delay, I would have said fuck that."
Well, the 5 second delay has come so common that it's longer than that in sports now.
So the whole Saturday Night Live skit was a word association skit.
They established a whole recording shit.
Yeah, no, we don't need to know that. It's boring. So the whole Saturday Night Live skit was a word association skit.
Yes. You've never heard this?
You've never heard this skit.
Okay, so you've got Chevy Chase on one side.
You could probably legally play it. Have you got it pulled up?
No, it's pretty basic. It's like
I'm gonna the amount of time that we're talking about this, I could have done it.
Yeah, just do it.
Okay, so Chevy Chase is on one side, he's on the other. Chevy Chase says dog, Richard says tree.
Oh yes, I did, yes.
Chase says fast, Bryce said slow. Rain, snow, white, black, bean, pod, then Negro.
Yep.
Whitey?
And his face goes angry.
Tar baby?
This later became a James Addiction song. What'd you say?
Addiction and body count.
Are you done?
It did. No.
It actually...
Tar Baby?
It did.
Ofei? Colored? Redneck? Jungle Bunny? Peckerwood? Burrhead? Cracker? Spear Chucker? White Trash? Jungle Bunny? Honky? Spade? Honky Honky?
Honky Honky is a great one. Like, double down.
Nigger? Dead Honky.
Yup.
Moon Cricket.
And the scene ends with him getting 3 times the pay and 2 weeks paid vacation starting immediately.
All right, so back to the body count and Jane's Addiction thing. Don't call me white boy. It was Ice-T and body count on one side and Jane's Addiction on the other side. Perry Farrell screaming at Ice-T, don't call me white boy, nigger. And...
But the weird thing is that proximate to the Saturday Night Live skit, and I think it might have followed, but proximate to the time that this comes out, the television program MASH was on.
Ooh.
And yes. When MASH started, they had a black character, the only black character
on TV that was prominent then, but that wasn't Sidney Poitier
ever. And they had a black character on MASH who lived in the tent with Hawkeye and the first one, Trapper John.
Right.
Uh-huh. And his name, being the black guy, was
Bloomer, wasn't it?
Spear Chucker.
But I think his name was Bloomer, and they called him Spear Chucker.
Yeah. Spear Chucker.
Like, both of them are kind of insulting.
Because he was a black guy on MASH. And, it was like...
It was a thing.
Yeah.
But it was kind of a breakout.
Well, what it was...
It was surfacing.
This skit was the epitome of, okay, now you need to know some things here, kids. This is the anger that's involved. This is... The virulent power that we feel behind it. And if you want to get into it, we need to discuss this in a way that's not associated with a job, with something else. We need to actually get into this and take a step back and look at it from a broader level. You want to address words, you want to address... The words are a symptom of something that's happening. Let's address the symptom.
The words are a symptom of something, I agree. So, and the symptom, to a great extent, has been addressed and handled. Well, the words have not gone through that same process.
That's the symptom, though. We've at least looked at the symptom at this point. Now we can go and start delving down.
I don't know that
and we're still
make those words okay again.
We're still 50 years later.
We're in a retrograde phase where people are seeking to demonize this shit all over again and drive all this stuff underground rather than getting real about it. It's like Lenny Bruce starts it out with his routine where he says, Lenny Bruce starts it out with his routine basically a dozen years prior to the Richard Pryor skit, and he does this thing where he's like, let's talk about niggers. And he says, nigger. And he says it incessantly for about 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And his idea is to first make you face the word, second, make you face the reality of what's going on.
And then by the end, the audience is laughing and cheering.
And then it comes out again in MASH. And now we're in this 1950s mm-hmm. thing where you can't say these words because we don't want to face this shit.
Yeah, but then we end up in 69 where Fryer brings it back around and takes claim of the word.
SJWs took us back to the 1950s where it's just like, let's not confront this stuff and let's just pretend it doesn't exist.
Well, this is one of those things where the ability for people to get the word out has just escalated over the years.
Jesse Jackson does it again 10 years after the MASH thing.
No, that's exactly my point. Is when you start with a very small influence, that influence grows. So it's the idea of, how do you change the world? I change it in my neighborhood. My neighborhood will change it in my county. My county will change it in my state. My state will change it in my country.
This is on national television.
Well,
yeah.
I'm not really sure what you're saying.
Agreed. It was on national television.
It made it easier for other people to step out.
Just don't
contribute. Makes it easier for other people to step out and grow with it and think that it's okay. It's okay to grow and do other things.
All right. So other things he was credited for. Nice shot. Straight in the pretzel bowl. There you go, Norm.
Pretzel bowl, dude.
So.
Turtle
shell. He is credited with being one of the first black actors to play more than one character in a TV show. Nowhere to go but up. He played, I think, three characters, maybe four. But he brought about a whole thing where there were actors before him that played more than one character, but they were exclusively white. He played, like, his dad, himself, his grandfather, his mom. And then he carried that out through the rest of his career and led people like Eddie Murphy and Arsenio Hall and those guys into that same kind of role where they could play the hairdresser and the gangster. Harry. And the Tyler Perry, high five. Good call. Exactly, those kind of guys. It was a really groundbreaking thing for actors and actresses all around. Color out the window. It was a really big bringer for lots of people. Like, playing your own twin became a thing, partially because of that.
Okay, your swamp cooler doesn't work.
Oh, fuck.
Seriously. The swamp cooler?
Well, if the dog didn't sell on the power source over there, we could put it over there near you, but we already lost a podcast because of this.
No. No, your dad's going to get used to the idea that I'm bringing my AC unit over next week.
And this, ladies and gentlemen, is why we need Patreon funding. It's for my electrical bill, because these bitches are bitches. See?
What did I say? And what did I say?
You ain't paying the electric bill either, you 19-year-old punk.
What did I say?
Ladies and gentlemen, guest entrance by Oberon, my son.
I told you I would give you motherfucking money.
All right, well, bring money over, and you know what? Better yet, you buy the beer, and it'll be fine. It'll go the same way.
That's way cheaper. I'd do that.
No, it's not. No, it's not. I've seen the way he drinks.
Is it, right? Is this an AC unit for a day?
It's a window unit for a day.
Oh, that's
well, I'm
like,
here.
Just
yeah.
Know we're podcasting because it's
we
hot as fuck
here. And he can't go home.
Like, it's swampland up in this place right now. It's kind of it's warm. We're a little uncomfortable, but all right. So back to Tom.
A little uncomfortable.
Well, oh, fuck you. I'm a little uncomfortable. You're a bitch.
At least you don't have a fur coat on your head.
So we're moving on.
Coat everywhere else, bitch.
1974.
When you stepped up to the real fucking world, let me know.
1974, he was arrested for tax evasion.
Go figure.
Well, I mean, as performers are wont to do, because their performers are not very good with money, especially when you're buying tons of cocaine.
Did you just say black people aren't good with money?
No, I said performers. damn, Norm, back away from the mic with those.
It
presents.
Still happens to this day. I mean, look at
smacking lips.
Oh, wait a minute. I was going to say Wesley
Snipes.
Yeah, it's
horrible.
Black.
Heard it.
And black people do so well with the performing arts.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
Musicians.
I don't know.
Especially nowadays. Like, they're killing it. They're dominating
Goo-goo dolls
pop music radio stations.
By their taxes.
No, they're not.
So, anyway.
Goo-goo dolls? Are you out of your mind?
No, pop music. He said today they're dominating the pop music.
For the tax evasion thing.
I think that's a black thing, because, like, Mick Jagger graduated from the Royal School of Economics.
For the tax evasion thing, he spent a total of 10 days in jail. Only 10.
Okay.
I want to get caught in tax evasion and only spend 10 days in jail, right? That's kind of a gifted position.
Maybe be friends with Nancy Pelosi.
Whom I don't know, so obviously perfect.
Okay, the next time you think that that's okay, why don't you look up how much time Wesley Snipes spent in jail for tax evasion?
Yeah, right?
So,
like, even
you don't
want to
get caught for tax evasion.
Although Travolta.
Well, let's be honest, Wesley Snipes kind of played bad.
Yeah, he didn't do a very good job with that one.
I mean, they basically sent him a letter, said, Wesley, we want to talk to you, and he went to, like, what? Angola or something. He like fled the
Buenos Aires somewhere.
Why
didn't you just know beforehand and just ship all your money over to the Swiss or the Bahamas or someplace like that and just walk away?
All right. So also in 1974, he started writing. And he co-wrote Blazing Saddles with Mel Brooks and Gene Wilder.
And he was going to star in it for a while.
Right, except, unfortunately, he set his shit on fire. Which is one of the best comedic ever moments. When a comedian can tell that funny of a joke story about themselves, like, I set my own shit on fire!
Yeah, there's two stories I heard about how he got set on fire, though.
The 151 round one, and then trouble with the torch. Go ahead.
Sure. Why don't you go ahead and finish this?
Okay. Well, there's one story.
Go ahead.
Those are the two, right? Start,
but, you know, you can go ahead.
Yeah, well, so there's one story where they say that he was super high, and he just poured 150 round one on himself and set himself on fire in a suicide attempt.
Yeah, that's not the word.
They had been watching footage of the monk that had set himself on fire prior, had gone through a complete fucking loss of sanity at the time.
He'd been high for weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And decided that that was pretty much a way to go out because he felt like a martyr and he was being a bitch. He's been everybody's bitch up until this point. And that's kind of what you feel like when you do drugs for weeks straight.
Well, and when you're in the public eye for that length of time, too. That doesn't help.
Yeah, you feel
personal. You kind of feel like you are everybody's bitch.
Yeah. You're the one checking the blinds and the windows.
Reported at the time, the large consensus was he set himself on fire from not widely known procedure known as freebasing.
Yeah.
This is the other rumor.
Yeah.
This was the main rumor at the time. Richard Pryor was freebasing.
Used a blowtorch, and a lot of people in that culture used a stuff called Jerry Curl, for lack of a better word. And it was mildly oil inflammable substance. And it might have caught his hair on fire, which set the rest of his body on fire. Ultimately, second-degree burns over more than 50% of his body, more than Michael Jackson.
Essentially freebasing.
Well, like, people put Michael Jackson out.
Is too
Richard Pryor ran a couple blocks down the road.
Essentially, freebasing was this mythical it was a real thing, but it was a way of smoking cocaine, which nobody had ever heard of before, and it was the precursor to crack. In other words, you were mixing cocaine with very strong alcohol and smoking it.
Very volatile liquids,
This made crack, and it was a way of making cocaine stronger, and then like 2 seconds later, we had crack cocaine.
So the one time I made crack, we did it with bottles and James regular. Because apparently it gave it that fruity flavor, and it cooked down in a slow enough way because there wasn't so much alcohol. And this was a precursor. Like, that keeps your shit from setting on fire. But if you're doing it with 151, it might be volatile.
Set on fire. If you went into a head shop at the time, you could even find freebasing pipes.
Yes.
And a freebasing pipe looked like a gigantic light bulb that you sucked out of the threaded end, and it had a little pipe bowl stuck in the top, and somehow you put alcohol in the bowl, the big light bulb part of this thing, and smoked cocaine through it, and somehow it increased the cocaine's potency. But essentially, he was doing crack cocaine.
Yeah, it increases the delivery and shortens the wait time, but it also decreases the length of the high.
Exactly.
And causes you to want more.
Exactly.
And that's the trouble with the whole crack issue.
Which I never really understood, because like cocaine in general always acted faster than pretty much any other drug.
I didn't really need less than a minute.
You've got to speed this up. I mean,
but that's what crack is.
What's
like,
the fastest?
You take a hit and you're high.
I
want
to pull this back.
Yeah. It's like there's
you need to speed
there's
it up.
Microseconds.
I want to pull this back around. Okay. Let's come back around. Be a little happier. Throughout the end of his life, he was diagnosed with a condition. What was the condition?
Multiple sclerosis. Sclerosis. Okay. Jesus.
Multiple sclerosis,
we do two in a day.
However, he did have a soft spot for animals.
He was a member of PETA, unfortunately. Yes, unfortunately, because I don't love PETA, but I do love some of their drive. And his message was good.
Yeah.
Like, the story he tells about his monkeys.
Well, one of the things that he was so adamant about is he was against...
Except for me and my monkeys.
He was against testing on the animals, even if it was going to further his own condition.
Yep.
And, you know, I don't know if it's just the fact that he found something later in life again, like, you know, we were talking about that he had an epiphany
to discuss things. You know, after that whole Bill Cosby phase.
I don't think.
Why don't you just let me finish a fucking thought? That'd be great.
Discussionary reasons. But anyhow, go ahead.
He had an epiphany then, and it led him through several years of, I mean, decades of a career that were up and down and riddled with so many problems. And then later in life, he had another epiphany. I like the animals. I like the pets. And this is the one joy that he found, and he's not even willing to fuck those things up to save his own life at this point. That's kind of cool.
It is cool. And I would agree, not just from that animal point, but from the personal drive point, that he didn't stop performing.
Yeah. No, never. Never.
Like, he showed up in Superman, what was it, four?
Three.
In a fucking wheelchair. And that's what he did. He performed until the end. He went on stage, and much of this is not recorded, unfortunately, but he went on stage and told jokes about his MS and how he's angry about not being able to get his fucking chair, like black man can't even stand up kind of stuff. And he did lines that were just fantastic. It's hard to find them, but they are out there. But he stuck with it. He really, really, it was obviously something he loved more than his wives.
Yeah, he had plenty of those.
Seven marriages.
In my research,
was that
everybody that dealt with him in his last few days said he was continually telling jokes. Ooh. So even up until the time he died, he was still trying to make people laugh and think.
All right, so flashback to his beginning of life, his youth. It's kind of the old defense system he had his entire life, was to make fun of the whole situation.
Yep.
But he did it in a very successful way, right? So the seven wives. Patricia Price from 60 to 67. Shelley Bonas from 67 to 69. That's a pretty short change. Deb Brog, it's spelled with a G-H at the end, which is weird.
That's Deborah.
I think it's Deborah, but I'm...
It's Deborah.
Way. McGuire from 77 to 79, so that was a decent break. Flynn Blaine from 86 to 87, and again in 90 to 91. And Jennifer Lee from 81 to 82, and again in 2001 until his death.
Uh-huh.
His kids, Renee Pryor, 1957, Richard Pryor Jr., 1961, Elizabeth Ann, 1967, Rain Pryor, who is an actress, who is in Head of the Class, in 1969, Stephen, 1984, and Kelsey, 1987, Franklin, 1987, it appears that the two 1987 people were different mothers. So...
Wow.
He also couldn't keep it in his pants.
He couldn't keep it in his pants, but you know what I didn't find? In, admittedly, the limited research that I did, was that I didn't hear any bitches about not paying child support, not taking care of kids, not doing that kind of thing. I didn't find any of those bitches.
And the kids show up in many of the documentaries saying good things about their dad.
Yeah.
Like, he fucking showed up at my baseball game. And shook hands and signed autographs, and my baseball game was fucked. But other than that, you know, like, he did show up. Like, he was there.
Yeah. Which is.
And he was noted even in his roast, which is one of the earliest recorded roasts that I've found on the internet. Even in his roast, he was brought out as a good father. And a relatively attentive guy. So, like, all right, so the marriage is... But I do think that he was actually, at that point in time, in love with those people. And so props to you, Rupert, on that point.
He just
got you beat by twice and a half.
He just didn't know what love... he just didn't know what love was. I mean, look at the way he was brought up.
Yeah, he didn't have the facilities or the tools.
Yeah. But he did know that he wasn't going to have a kid treated the way that he was. So he didn't know how to love another... person as his equal or his partner, but he damn knew that that kid is not going to go up the way that I did.
Yeah, right.
And that's proof on the positive. I mean, I'm sure that somebody out there is going to find some thing on the internet that proves me wrong.
Well,
but
this is one of the weird ones where, you know, our famous search, like, why is so-and-so an asshole? Why does so-and-so suck? What's the worst thing about so-and-so? This is one of the weird ones where I didn't do that.
I did.
I looked at his youth, and I was like,
That's probably enough dark side. I was trying to get away from the Eileen Wuornos thing. So I really wanted to do the up, and it was just, he just didn't deserve me finding his shit points. Well, other than he set himself on fire and had a couple of heart attacks and died of one. I mean, but that's
he was really good about here.
Everything
he
knew
put about all of his negatives out there.
Yeah,
he put them out there. He's like, boom, here it is. Okay, for the same way that he incorporated a word back into society and made it non-threatening, he incorporated his life the same way later on.
Yes. Well, so, and boom, even in the early game, it was a lot about allowing his very dark world to be funny,
mm-hmm.
and allowing us as listeners or viewers to identify with it, and yeah, he was wow. I think it's totally that time.
Half the time of Disneyland.
A few weeks ago, we discussed Eileen Wuornos, and I mentioned how you really don't have a chance when you're put in that situation, but this made me rethink that, because he came out of a very similar situation. It was really no sunshine on your face, ever. And he turned it into such an amazing, amazing career that all of us cross-culture can believe in and laugh at and think is wonderful. I mean, yes, he had legal trouble. I mean, he shot up his fucking car, which we didn't touch on. He did a lot of wacky shit, but really, he kind of fought the whole way along, right up until his death. He fought the thing that was killing him, and I kind of admire the guy.
He was responsible for what we know as intelligent comedy today. If you want to go to a good show, and you want to laugh and think, you're not going to go see Carrot Top. Mm-hmm. Okay, I've seen Carrot Top. I was really unimpressed. I would rather sit at home and watch a rerun of Richard Pryor any day of the week, or Chris Rock, or Eddie Murphy, or Dave Chappelle. The people that he actually inspired.
Yeah.
He inspired them to create comedy to make a difference. It addressed a social nature. You actually had to think and be aware of things that were going on around you. Sure, he was fucked up. And your little dig to Eileen last week was, okay, here's the deal. Eileen took it one way. Richard paid the price. He did.
He did.
He paid a heavy price, and he paid it with his life, and he paid it over and over again.
He was so good.
The amount of fucked up shit that he dealt with, he didn't get a chance to deal with. He tried to through an open mic, and God forbid he didn't have that open mic. He would have offed himself years earlier.
Right.
But he had a chance, and he had an opportunity, and he took it, and he made himself bigger, better, faster, and stronger. And as a result, he made us as a society bigger, better, faster, and stronger, because he's caused us to challenge things. And we are able to challenge things because of him, even as white men.
Amen.
Yeah, I can't add a lot to that. I mean, Richard Pryor, The thing of it is he did it, and like almost any routine I can think of that I've ever seen him perform, at least three quarters of it was this challenging political stuff. And the thing about it that made it work was it was funny.
Mm-hmm.
Because he did it in a very funny, funny way that made you think about it. And the last time I can think about this shit happening, Chris Rock does it some.
His delivery is a little weird.
Chris Rock is equally as funny as Richard Pryor. Chris Rock makes you laugh like crazy. But Chris Rock, the political stuff, a little bit lower down. Chris Rock had this one line where it's like, you know, white people have it easier, white people have it better, blah, 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 blah. And he's like, I can prove it right now. I'm black as shit, and like, I'm rich, and none of you white people would trade places with me. And that really made you think.
Mm-hmm.
And Richard Pryor did that, but it was three-quarters of his whole act, and the most important thing was not that he did political humor, but he did it, and it was funny. And that was the key to it. And we've gotten away from that, and we have gotten into this thing where it's just like, don't talk about it, acknowledge your privilege, don't say the N-word, blah, 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 don't acknowledge all this stuff. And it's like, we have gotten into this 1950s repressed bullshit that, like, just engenders a much more racial attitude. And I think it's really corrosive and really horrible, and I wish we'd get out of it.